Before we actually begin the show in earnest, and they'll cut this part, don't worry, because I might get a little awkward, so don't include this in the show. Russ, the beard is looking good, my man. Yeah. I am loving it. Are you doing something different? Are you eating different vegetables or using some sort of dye?
Yeah, so I tried Beard Be Gone for many, many years, and then I just stopped cold turkey, and that actually made a big difference.
So it grows, it wants to grow.
Yeah, it wants to grow.
And you've been stopping it.
I've been stifling it because people were, you know, I've been using my school ID to get discounts at the supermarket. And the only way that they would really grant it is if the beard was like very short and stubbly Baby and face. Gross. So since I ditched it, it's made a big difference.
If you want to see this, I have just tweeted a screenshot of Russ with the caption, "The beard looking good." So apropos of nothing. So that won't make any sense to people now.
Right.
But if you go back through my Twitter, you can see the beard looking good.
The beard looking good. Hey. Who invited Robert Downey Jr. is what I want to know to our podcasts. Yeah. What a get.
The little bit of pepper in the little, there should be a word for that highly sexual bit at the bottom of your mouth. Right, that almost seems too flirty. Are you shaving it that
much
way?
For me.
Or are you just blessed?
Touching gray. And I know he gets so like pissy if we don't. Chris, your beard looks good too.
Yeah, Chris, your beard looks great, bud.
I've only been out for, you know, like a month and then I come back.
Yeah.
And the first thing you do is insult my beard.
Wait, actually, Chris, I'm sorry, we're out of time. Out of time, Chris, sorry, we gotta start the show, bud. Sorry. God, this feels terrible to do, but I gotta do it. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the season.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the end of the last year.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the winter.
My name is Ross Froschick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we discuss the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. It's a game of the year show that goes all year long. It's like a book club but for video games. It's all things to all people, as long as all those people like to hear someone pronounce it Mario. It's the Besties. And this week we are diving in as this a slight lull in the hottest new releases continues. We are diving in to see, hey, do we miss anything? Were there some like deep cuts we wanted to circle back on that we didn't get a chance to do a full episode about? Because folks, the games just keep on coming. I don't know if you log on to the Switch store and look at it, it looks like a parallel dimension of video games where there's like 50 games that no one has ever told you anything about, but they're just there.
And they all cost $1.50.
Yes. And most of them are about a woman solving crimes by finding hidden objects.
That game is called Murder by Numbers, and it rips. It's
no, that's 30 different games.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Does Murder by Numbers does rip, but that's a Picross game. Anyway, we're gonna talk about the latest and greatest that you may have missed. Not the big new releases, the deep cuts. Plant, I've really talked about deep cuts too much. So let's just get right into it. Russ.
You're just saying everybody's names now. Say no, mine. Yeah. Say my
no,
name.
I'm giving it. I'm giving it to Russ. I'm tossing the puck to Russ.
Okay. So I've got the
Russ,
puck.
Russ, Noida.
Yeah.
Noida.
Yeah, it does feel like we got through a holiday season, and there were a lot of like obvious big games that we needed to talk about. And right. I know Noida is a game that we've talked about very, very briefly here and there. And it's a game that I played in early access, I want to say 2 years ago, and then I played a little bit last year, but over the last like week or two, I've been playing it as my like, it's early Sunday morning, like wake up kind of game while I'm eating breakfast.
What are you playing it on?
I'm playing it on PC. It is only available on PC, which is kind of a drag.
That's what I thought.
I wish it was on Switch or something portable, but it is only available on PC. Quick refresher for people that are not aware, Noida, which is spelled N-O-I-T-A on Steam, is a side-scrolling 2D roguelike where you are like a wizard and you're basically delving into a procedurally generated mountain, and you're using various spells to kill enemies that drop gold, and then you use the gold at the end of each level to purchase new spells or new upgrades for your character. That's like the juice of it. And then the hook is the mountain is made up of all sorts of materials. So it's made up of maybe there's like oil pools, or maybe there's like, you know, stone, or there's like wood boxes, or there's various other materials. And all of your spells basically interact with those materials in ways that are like very like a dominoes situation. So for example, if I fire a fire spell above a pool of oil, the pool of oil will light on fire. But if the pool of oil is surrounded by like a wooden container, the wooden container will also light on fire, causing the pool to fall below and basically send fire on the people below it. It is maybe more intimidating than Spelunky is, just like jumping into it, because it is extremely punishing very early on. But I do think what it has that Spelunky doesn't necessarily have is it has a wow factor of like, I can spend like 30 minutes in that first area just like goofing around with these different materials and making these like crazy combinations of events happen. And I find that like super satisfying. Unlike Spelunky, there's no timer. You could like really take your time in each area and get to know how these like different things interact with one another. And it's really been growing on me a lot. No one here has really played it recently.
I mean, for the listener, people who, I don't know, were into like flash games very early on will remember a very specific type of flash game that wasn't even a game. It was like a physics and material sandbox where you could like click, and you, when you clicked, it would like release a certain material. So you could like just layer in dirt or layer in oil or layer in water, and you could see how all those little tiny pixel particles reacted to each other. This is like if somebody was like, hey, I really like that. What if I also made Spelunky inside of it? And I think you're right. Like, I don't know. It's both more intimidating and not than Spelunky. I think it's more instantly fun. And I don't mean that as like a critique of Spelunky. I just think it's very playful. And I think like dying in it doesn't feel that infuriating because, I don't know, the first time I played, I didn't even know that there was a level beyond the first level. It just felt like something to kind of tool around in that would go on forever. And at the same time, though, once you do have the drive to like complete the game, it, for me, it felt impossible. And I really dug it, but I like looked ahead after getting past the first, I think, two stages and was like, this is now a game that I watch on YouTube. Like there is a certain class of person who is good at this game. Much like fighting games, I will go watch the rest of this game.
Yeah, it feels like the sort of game that you would play on the like school computer. Like instead of Oregon Trail, you boot this up because it happens to be installed, like some freeware version was installed on your school computer.
Yes.
It's like that kind of game.
We're only talking to like 35 year olds and older.
I know. I'm sorry. moving your turtle in Logo Writer 360 degrees. I agree with Plant. Like it gets really way more dense once you start getting into the like spell crafting and like all that stuff. But honestly, like I think just for the first area and just like screwing around there, it's worth the price of admission. Whether you want to go deeper than that is sort of up to you, but I've really been digging it.
If you can completely divorce yourself from the idea of progression and just focus on like, think of it as like a learning tool, similar to my approach to Spelunky, I think you can have more fun with it. I thought it was neat. I'd like to return to it. It was a little hinky the first time.
Are there plans to bring it to like consoles and Switch and stuff?
I haven't seen anything. I've looked a few times, like looking for like Switch ports. I know obviously people are requesting it. It would require some pretty extensive control changes because right now it really does kind of live and die using the mouse keyboard controls for a lot of different things.
Yeah. I think it's I could be talking out of my tuchus here, but I think it's CPU intensive. So I'm not sure it would run on
for like the physics simulation.
But then again, they ran fucking Witcher on the Switch, so I think they could handle it.
Well, they kind of ran Witcher on the Switch.
Chris,
Chris has been gone for a while and we've missed him very much, but the way you have made your sort of grand reentrance into this debutante ball is it's confusing.
It's not a deep cut. Let's be very clear. It is.
I would say it's a pretty fucking deep cut.
It's a deep cut in the context of this day that we are recording, the year of our Lord Anno Domini 2021, January 20th.
Here's the thing.
Congratulations, Jim Gordon Budden. I really appreciate you.
You probably haven't noticed this about me, right? But I become very infatuated with like one game a year or 2 years or 3 years. Nier Automata, you had a good run. But it's Death Stranding's time, baby. Death Stranding, number one game of all time. I can't wait to talk about it on every episode from here on out. Here's the thing. Death Stranding, it's a perfect video game. And I'm talking
Jesus
about it right
Christ
now.
Christ almighty. You can't just say those kinds of things here, Chris.
It's a perfect video game. In fact, there's no problematic things in Death Stranding. Chris Plant. It is the game that I think everybody should play in the winter of 2021, because it is a game about an America that is just in the absolute pits because there's an invisible threat that makes it so people can't go outside. So everybody's at home on their iPads and their mobile phones calling up Norman Reedus saying, can you get me some pizza or some wine or some comic books or some fresh underwear because I need it now. I'm super lonely.
Did you say Normal Reedus?
Normal Reedus. Easy Reedus, not hard Reedus, Normal Reedus.
Off the shelf Normal Reedus, no augmentations, no customizations. This is just...
Can I say something, Chris, about Death Stranding?
Yeah, no, I would love you to.
I really liked Death Stranding, and because of there was a deluge of games coming out when it came out, and I played it for a good long time. But it was something I really enjoyed. I took a little time away from it, and I tried to go back to it. And boy, howdy, was that just... That was a challenge. That was a tough...
Yeah.
It was tough to get back in after you've been away for a while.
And that's because of the story, you know?
And the controls and everything.
Yeah. No, all of that's great. People dogged on, like, the driving this game. I don't mind that at all. I like how this feels like a Bennett Foddy game made at scale. But boy, oh boy, the story, they really do a lot to make sure you don't play the game. Because the first, 5 hours, it felt like, are largely kind of nonsense, cutscenes. And then when you really, really, really get going and the game, I mean, much of the game is a video game ass game, like more so than I think any Kojima game I've played. And then you're really in it. And then out of nowhere, the director of Drive shows up. And he's like, by the way, I kill myself every 25 minutes. But for the 25 minutes that I'm awake, I need to talk to you for the next 4 death cycles.
And does that happen in the game?
And it is, it's really something.
I reviewed it. I don't even remember that happening.
Yeah, and everybody seems to be aware that nobody wants this to be happening because their director of Drive keeps turning to the camera and giving you the thumbs up, like, just stick with me, dude. Just keep going. We're all going to get through this together.
Are you saying like are you finding yourself mostly kind of? And I think I just assume this about you and your relationship with Nier Automata, which is a better game than Death Stranding by virtually every sort of metric that one can measure games. But is it the novelty feels dismissive, but like in the sense of video games, like novelty, I think is a really incredible thing. And I think it's something that Hideo Kojima wields like a powerful sword. Can you take a look in that mirror and earnestly say like that is what is sort of endearing you to Death Stranding? Because it has some big problems.
Well, let me say this to defend Plant for a second, then Plant can jump in. No joke, I am not being facetious. I think as a game, like gameplay wise, this is the best Hideo Kojima game I've ever played.
You're out of your fucking mind.
He's spot on.
No, he's 100% right. Yeah.
I can't believe I'm the only one out here. You guys are, it's you, great. You enjoy the gameplay of Death Stranding.
I really do, because I...
Yeah, the game is actually fun.
Yeah, it's very good.
It is a game...
Yeah, it's so innovative. Yeah.
Did you play...
So
did, you guys played Metal Gear Solid 5, though. That game was fun as hell.
Yeah, and that actual... That was like my second favorite Hideo Kojima as a game.
And I think the Game Boy Color version of Metal Gear.
Yeah, but there's so many other cover shooters, like Wind Back, Gears of War... I just don't think it feels that original.
Metal Gear Solid 5 wasn't a cover shooter. What are you talking about?
Yeah, there's like lots of different cover shooters. Like Dark Void was one where you went vertical cover shooter, and then there was all the Gears games. And Metal Gear Solid 5 is a pretty good cover shooter.
Metal Gear Solid 5 is a game where you fucking boogie board down a hill on a cardboard box and then attach a balloon to a man so he flies up into heaven to hang out with Jesus and stuff. Like, you guys are out of your...
It's a good
game.
Yeah,
but if you attach a balloon to normal Reedus, you know what's going to happen? Fucking nothing. He's way down, baby.
That's not true. I think you can attach a balloon to normal Reedus in Death Stranding.
No, but you can skateboard down the ice mountain. I'll answer your question, Griffin. I think I actually told this to Freshik while I was trying to defend my feelings. I definitely think there is a bit of...
This show should be called Defend Your Feelings.
I think there is a bit of like the wine snob here, where it's like, you know, the more wine you drink, the more you can actually taste the little details. So you should just not drink nice wine that often. And you'll be like, whatever, this $10 wine tastes perfectly good. I think I've like had a little bit too many video games. So I try something different and I'm like, yeah, I really taste that zip. That said, I do think the actual gameplay... It is my favorite power fantasy in a video game, maybe ever, because here is this huge world that does not want you in it at all, and it makes you feel miserable getting around it, and you walk it on foot for a large chunk, but as you go through the game, you are actually making the world accessible and navigable and enjoyable to go around, and... I don't know how it was at the very beginning. I remember playing a little bit for the show when it first came out, and I didn't remember seeing that many, helpful items created by other players. Playing it now, there's just stuff everywhere. Like, the environment is full of stuff from other players. So it felt like Dark Souls, but nice. Like, what if you played Dark Souls, but everything that people did in the game and via multiplayer was meant to help you, and you were also doing things meant to help other people, and you were actually incentivized to do it. So like the combination of, hey, here's a game where the actual gameplay is a metaphor for the moment of like literally what's going on in our world, and the game itself is about helping other people and them helping you. I don't know, and it like hit me at my core. Like it really got me in that sweet spot.
Did you mention that you're talking about this because it came out on PC last winter?
Oh, I don't remember if you mentioned that. Yeah. Came out, I believe, in the summer. As I push the glasses up my nose.
Griff, tell me about the hardest nose detective on these mean streets, Mo Ashtray.
Mo Ashtray is not the name of the game. I believe it was Russ who added that H in there. The name of the game is
Mo Ashtray.
Mo Ashtray.
It may even be M-O. It's M-O in capital letters, and then colon, and then astray, and there's no space in it. So you all tell me what that is. You play a character named Mo, so I guess that's probably it. Mo Astray was a PC puzzle platformer that came out in 2019, but last year it came out on Switch and iOS, although I would thoroughly recommend you play the Switch version because it has a sort of almost twin stick platforming element where you move with the left stick, and with the right stick you aim a jump that you execute by pressing one of the triggers. It is very much, it's funny that it came out in the same year as Carrion, because I think sort of conceptually it has a lot in common with Carrion, where Carrion you play a monster going around this sort of ruined science facility and just like sort of wrecking shop. Mo Astray takes place in a scientific facility where that has already happened, and you're kind of sifting through the pieces. But it is not the longest game. It's pretty short, and it's one of those great games where every idea that it kind of introduces, it sees through to its logical conclusion. So you play this little blob, and you're trying to figure out what's going on through this facility. You are sticky, so if you jump, you can stick up to the ceiling for a while. The platforming starts out very, very simple like that, of just sort of aiming your jumps as you toss yourself through this dangerous environment. But as you go, you unlock new powers. And, you know, you get the double jump. That's what you would assume. But pretty much everything past that gets, like, kind of weird. You get a power where you can attach yourself to the head of an enemy and take control of them, which you then have to use to, you know, some enemies can open up special doors with their key cards. You get an ability where you can divide yourself in two and kind of explore that way. Saying it that loud, out loud, like, I don't know that there are a ton of ideas that are like completely brand new in MMORPG. But this game kind of came out of nowhere. It's from a developer named Archprey Inc. And it's just really very, very well made, to a degree where I was kind of blown away that this was one of those games that I was just kind of scrolling around the eShop and I saw it on sale. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll pick it up. It's something like $10 or something like that. And it's really good. It has a surprisingly great, very, very sort of heavy sci-fi story. And I think I would put it like on the level with Carrion, in that, you know, going through a sci-fi story like this from the perspective of the, you know, potentially the enemy, the monster, is such a fascinating idea. And this game handles it way less like in a John Carpenter way and more in a, I don't know, just a creepy, almost H.R. Giger sci-fi way. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that counts as a deep cut. I hadn't heard about this game at all, so it sounds really awesome.
Yeah, I think this is the first game. It's like a student project from a team that just like has been working on this game for 3 years, and then it comes out and it's their first game, and it absolutely kicks ass. I think everyone should play it. I think they're based out of Taiwan. It's really cool. I also wanted to give, sorry, I wanted to give a quick shout out. Jackbox 7 has a game called Talking Points. Jackbox 7 is really good. It has a lot of good games. It has one of the games included is called Talking Points, and it is a PowerPoint presentation game. Chris, I don't know. We've played it in our like weekly friend group call. I don't know that you were on the last time we actually got into Talking Points, but everybody like writes a subject, and then those subjects are mixed around and everyone is kind of assigned one. And then a player has to give a prompt or has to give a speech to this PowerPoint presentation, and they are allowed to select like what the next verbal prompt is, like the subject that they are going to talk about on the next slide. But they have a partner assigned at random who selects the image that is put up on the screen. And so the image and the prompt never have anything to do with each other. But the entire like crux of the game is you are giving a speech and you don't know what you're going to be giving it about. And you have to sort of keep a train of thought and make everything feel very natural because everybody scores you at the end based on the strength of your PowerPoint presentation.
Mm, that's great.
It's fucking hysterical. Yeah, that's cool. It is so, so, so funny.
I dig it.
Yeah.
Yes. So I wanted to briefly talk about, now this was actually released in the fall, but I wanted to talk about it anyway, because I didn't talk about it and I didn't play it until now. And it's great. It's called Spiritfarer.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great.
All right. Let's go to our.
You're basically the new Charon. So whenever what's his face comes by, you sell him items. No, it's different. It's you're the like guy who takes people across the River Styx to the afterlife, and you are basically in control of this big boat where you're sailing around, meeting souls that aren't ready to go yet, and helping them sort of, in a sense, complete their unfinished business, but really more about like coming to terms with their life. And that sounds very heavy. And in a sense it is, but the bulk of the game is basically life management. So you've got this gigantic ship and you build people their own houses and you build a orchard and a field and tend to all those crops. And you've got a kitchen and a refinery. A faster pace, but similar to like an Animal Crossing, if sometimes the people on Animal Crossing died. It's kind of like that. The tone is very sweet. The color, it's all very colorful and lovely. And the life management stuff is like, is very satisfying. It's not too, you know, it doesn't feel too redundant. There's a lot of like, a lot of the time, once you, one big run at a resource is enough to sort of cover you for the game. It's not something where you're constantly tending 1,000 different plants all the time. But it is fun to like rearrange your ship to get sort of an optimal path for your daily tending. And there's also a great exploration aspect where you're like exploring this very cool world and getting new. It's in a 2D platformer style. So like you're getting these like platforming abilities as well as you're sort of helping shepherd these people into the afterlife. It's very unique. It doesn't feel or look or sound like anything I've played before. The music is also
it's
great.
It's so gorgeous. It is.
Did any of you finish it?
No,
I have not yet, but yeah. I probably will. I'm very much enjoying it.
Yeah, I bounced off of it, and I think people should definitely play it. I got what I wanted to out of the game, but like it was part of a trend that I've felt over the past couple of years where I don't know if it's specific to life management games or just certain type of indie games where it's not that they wear out their welcome. I just don't need to keep playing. I don't know. Like something kind of just fell off for me one day with that game. I don't really
when
know
you
why.
Get enough plates spinning on the life management side, it does start to get a little like I'd like to do other things, but I also have these 10 other like chores that I need to do. Now, some of those are kind of interestingly automated where if you keep the people on your ship happy by feeding them and talking to them and hugging them from time to time, they will tend to some of your daily jobs. So there's one person who will like play music for your plants to help them grow and someone who will like bring you some ore that they refined, that kind of thing. But it's not like enough to where you're just going to be able to completely rely on that.
I think that's what, in my mind, like Stardew Valley is still like the best life management sim that has been made because that ladder that it builds towards automation is like the reward you get is now you don't have to water your crops anymore. Like you work very, very hard on your farm so you can get to a point where you don't have to spend your time farming. And like Spiritfarer does that a bit, but it didn't, I still was doing a lot of, you know, fucking flax harvesting more than I would probably like
there, but it's fun. It's very cool. I also wanted to give a brief, I've not played this one nearly as much, but I did dip into it and it is a winter release called Call of the Sea. And you guys check that out?
No, I've heard people talking about it. I don't know.
Very good so far. It's a, you are a woman who has been afflicted with this like mysterious disease and her husband left to go to this mysterious island near Tahiti to try to find a cure, and then he disappeared. So now you are going hunting for him, and that plays out through landing on this mysterious island. His expedition is gone, but they've left traces, and you are trying to basically track him down and solve the mysteries of this island through what are basically, I mean, it's basically like puzzles that are really well done. I mean, it's the perfect balance of like laying out enough pieces, but then making you feel smart for putting them together. And it's getting increasingly challenging as I play. Aesthetically, tonally, I would say it's kind of like it's that
Jungle Cruise.
It looks kind of like a lot like the Jungle Cruise actually, but like the tone is like it's the aesthetic of like British 40s like. Not unlike BioShock, like it's got a little bit of that vibe, not in the Randian sort of like
objectivism
monolithic tones, but yeah, exactly. But like in the sense of that time period, if you find like romance in that 30s, you know, expedition kind of vibe, it's very cool, very well acted, feels good, looks great, great music. Call of the Sea.
What about the fun factor?
The fun factor is actually same as the reviewer's tilt. 3.5 screaming faces out of 5.
Wow.
So pretty good.
Is it half a screaming face?
Half a screaming face. Terrifying. That's how you know it's. I would love to get it to 4 screaming faces, but the rocket launcher feels
I'm sorry, they're called Scary Larrys.
Oh, sorry.
That's all the show that is right now. And Now there will be an advertisement, or there won't be. There won't be. But if you're listening later, we've covered this. It's time for a break, then more show.
We need more listeners.
Yeah, we got to get more listeners. We're being more open about this.
Let's just to sort of go behind the scenes a little bit. One, we need more listeners, or this whole thing's going to fall the fuck apart. But the other thing is that every episode before, like the day before we start recording it, Russ is like, we need a B segment. And then he always has a first idea. And the first idea is, I think we can all agree, and I think Russ would even agree with this, a real stinker. So like, I would love to get around that by, one, having an ongoing sort of B segment for the show, but one that also puts gamer asses right in their gamer chairs. The ones that vibrate whenever they do like an active reload in Gears of War 5 or whatever. Do people like that?
What?
Do people really like it when their chair is like, oh, you got shot.
Is this
and
the
you
segment?
Get a buzz on? Yeah, this is my sort of Andy Rooney-esque sort of thing where I talk about gamer chairs.
Keep going.
Okay, yeah, are people really doing this? Like, you get shot and you like that? So that's one idea for, like, an ongoing B segment.
Yeah, yeah. Andy Rooney, definitely going to pack them in.
And I could start, like, emailing gamer chair companies and asking them to send me their products. And then it would slowly sort of evolve into me giving actual, earnest, heartfelt reviews of gamer chairs and telling people which ones are the best ones and which ones make your butt rumble the most when you get shot.
Yeah.
That's just one idea.
Okay. I've been thinking of, what if we did commentary on speedruns, but we didn't have the video because this is a podcast, obviously. So we really just talk through what happened in the speedrun.
Okay. So we all watch the same speedrun at the same time and sort of talk about what we are seeing.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're not educated on the actual details of the strats.
Well, it depends on the game, right? So if it's Mario, like, you know, I know he's jumping on a Goomba to go higher, right? That's not
And that's a huge, that's like a major building block for Mario speedruns is you jump on the Goomba to make you go higher. You gotta do that.
I got a new one where I find like some lifestyle hacks for pro gamers.
Yeah.
This is from gopuff.com and it's popular gamer foods to fuel your sessions.
Oh, cool.
And so I just want to hit the list here.
Yeah, let's read
Doritos.
Those.
Believe it or not, there used to only be two flavors. Mountain Dew, the blast of caffeine and sugar have kept many a gamer going through the night.
That's true.
Pizza.
Pizza.
It's so good. Pizza. It's so good. It's so easy to pop a frozen pizza in the oven. This will always be a go-to gamer food.
It just says pizza. It's so good.
It's so ridiculously good. Gummy bears. They're chewy, fruity, and easy to eat.
Yeah.
No crumbs or gummy bear dust to swab out of your keyboard. The sugar punch is there too, of course. Try their cousins, gummy worms. Chicken nuggets. Who can't eat 1,000 chicken nuggets at a time?
Everyone.
The crispy breaded exterior, the soft juicy interior, and the choose your own dipping sauce adventure never gets old. Sweet and sour, BBQ, ranch, honey mustard.
These are just
spicy mustard
sauces.
Buffalo. Somebody's getting paid by the word. Chipotle.
What website?
I only want to read this website. That's fucking strong.
Cheez-Its. Last one, Cheez-Its, bite-sized cheesy bits that are easy to eat, and they just taste so good. They got the cheesy, salty cracker combo just right. You'll find that you've cleaned out half the box without realizing it. Sorry about your controller.
So I think we have to get to the heart of what gamers are. Merriam-Webster defines gamer as a noun, a player who is game, or a person who plays games. Yes. The etymology of it is a mid-15th century, an athlete, agent noun from game or gaiman, meaning one devoted to playing video or computer games that attested in 1981. One of the original uses of the word comes from 1975 in reference to Dungeons and Dragons. Also, gamester is attested from, this is from Online Etymology Dictionary. Gamester is attested from 1580s, but also sometimes meant prostitute. Okay. Compare old slang, the game, as in sexual intercourse in the
1930s.
God.
Bazinga.
Yeah, I feel like we've learned a lot about gamers. And that's why I think we should have a rolling lottery contest where we give away a lifetime supply of Mountain Dew to one random listener a year. But you have to listen to every episode.
I need a lifetime supply of Mountain Dew to wake me back up after that segment.
Do you not like to learn?
No, not in my gaming podcast.
It's called education.
I had a cool idea where I thought we could do prank calls on Cliffy B.
What?
Oh.
We call Clifford and we do prank calls to him.
Okay, so we can call him. Should we play it out?
Are you going to play Cliffy
I'll
B?
I'll play Cliffy.
Hey, bud. Think about what you just said. Are you really ready to channel that energy through your body? Because I want a full... If you're going to do this, I want it full-blown I Am Zool levels of Cliffy B takeover.
I mean, I wasn't sure which era we're talking about. Because at this point, I feel like Cliffy B is just kind of chilling out in his house. I don't think he's doing...
I don't know about that, but...
Really?
I think he's still out and about. I think he's still...
You think he's still wearing Affliction t-shirts in the public?
Yeah, so let's do this thing. I want to hear what U.S. Cliffy B sounds like.
Oh, Christ. Okay.
Quick question before we start. Since this is a prank call, I think you need to be like a similarly funny individual, Griffin. Can you be Peter Molyneux calling Cliffy B?
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, yeah. Okay, sure. I can definitely channel that.
Ring. Do-do-do-do-do. Did it. So.
Hello, hello, hello.
Why am I holding the phone?
Is this Clifford Blusonski?
Yo, yeah, it's me. It's Dude Bro himself.
That's how I, Peter Molyneux, say your name with my accent. Clifford Blusonski. You son of a gun. Hello, hello.
We used to be good friends at E3. Why are you talking like that?
It's us. I have a COVID. No, just a cold. Anyway, do you want to see what's inside of my box?
Oh, I'd love to.
Clifford, come tap on my box and see what's inside of it, God.
Okay, I'm tapping on it. What's in there?
Dream.
We've really found a segment that is going to attract dozens.
That one's
going
to.
You know how Peter Molyneux is on the tips of everybody's tongues right now.
For the life of me, I tried. I could not put the fake phone down that I was holding up with my thumb and pinky finger. I really tried.
Yeah,
you kids like GOTUS?
That would have been good.
Okay. Is there male Chris or...
Listen...
I would do anything.
We had...
To have some structure.
We had some people share some of the things that they're playing to get through this long winter. Alexis on Twitter said, I finally picked up the Sexy Brutale on your rec and I really enjoyed it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Other than that, Monster Camp has been a great pick-me-up for this COVID-19 hellscape.
I don't know that. Which, do we know what Monster Camp is? I don't know what that game is.
I don't.
Isn't it like a Pokemon?
Well, there's a Switch game called Monster Sanctuary that just came out that people are talking about. That's like sort of a Pokemon Metroidvania.
Oh, yeah. I saw people talking about that.
It's a visual novel.
Oh, okay.
Monster Prom 2, Monster Got Camp.
It. Ah, I see.
Gross Meat said, don't starve together. Apparently it was dead for a long time and it is getting updates like crazy this winter. I just discovered it and it's been my go-to online co-op experience. Even met some new friends. How wild. That game originally came out, 10 years ago as like a HTML5 game? And now it's like...
It's still going.
It's wild. Ian is playing Satisfactory and Jurassic World Evolution. Hey, Jurassic World Evolution... For a tie-in game, pretty fun. Did any of you play that game?
Which one? No, I don't know what it is.
It's Jurassic like Zootopia, but with dinosaurs.
Yeah, and it's made by, Hannah is playing Carto, which we talked about. Do we talk about Carto?
I don't think so.
Oh, so Carto rules. Carto is, it's a 2D game. And you're this like little girl who is getting around a map, but the map is kind of like block-based, almost like a tabletop game, and you can rearrange the map. So you are kind of creating the map. That's what it's called, cartography. So you rearrange the actual map that you're walking around in order to get to new places. So it's like a mix of, like, I don't know, navigation and puzzle game.
Cool.
It's super charming.
Like a slide? Is it like a slide puzzle situation?
It looks like a slide puzzle, but you don't have the annoying aspect of it actually being a slide puzzle.
Oh, perfect.
The worst type of game.
Mm. The worst puzzle.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's it. Was that enough structure for you, Justin? Did we get back on track?
I loved it.
Felt very
I loved it. I you know, normally we do honorable mentions here, but I feel like we have
been the show plumbed so the far, depths. Yeah.
Do you want me to read any more in the dictionary? Because I have there's 5,000 pages.
I'd rather you didn't. That is going to do it for this episode. Next week, there's a new game.
Yes.
Hitman 3.
This goes up on... This goes up after the game has come out. It's fucking great. I don't know how much y'all have put into Hitman 3, but it absolutely fucking kicks ass.
Everyone says it is outrageous, and it has the best... I've heard this... The best club level that anyone has ever made. And a
club level?
Like, apparently there's like a level set in a club, and it's like incredible.
It's fine. It's very cool, that level. We will talk about that. But for me, the star of the show is there is a Knives Out level that is like, think every single person should play. It is, I didn't play Hitman 1 or 2. But I am really, really enjoying
really.
I played a little bit of Hitman 2, but I am really enjoying my time.
I need
with
someone
Hitman
to
3,
teach me how to play this game. Maybe off
it's
the
got
show.
A tutorial that is it is very, very straightforward.
Another cool time to talk about Hitman 3 would be next week on our Hitman 3 episode.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Hey, please. Like, nobody's listening to this show.
Okay.
If you could just do us a favor and share it.
Let's not diminish the very sturdy and ever-growing audience that we do have, but it could be a lot more to make this a financially viable.
There's a lot more people out there. If you would share a link, besties.fan, tell people, you know, like, subscribe, leave reviews, all the usual stuff, except now we really need it because Big Daddy Spotify isn't depositing in our bank account anymore.
And if you know how to, find gamers, let us know.
Yeah, if you know any gamers,
we've tried everything.
We put it on all the blogs, other gaming blogs. We got an email address too if you want to get a hold of us, mail@besties.fan. We got a Twitter @thebestiespod. You can follow there and sign up for our mailing list there if you so choose. But that is going to do it for us for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next week for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!